Session on House Bill 2295. That was the bill that we had the amendment that we're going to create an emergency clause on this. And that is here. So it's dash 84, as I see up here.
Mr. Chair, you in work session?
Yes.
I move the dash 84 amendments to House Bill 2295.
Senator Myers moved the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2295. Any comments from the committee? Any objections?
So.
Okay.
There it is.
The amendment is adopted.
I move House Bill 2295 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Byers moved House Bill 2295 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments from the committee?
Just one. I want to thank Senator Beyer for his suggestion about the emergency clause. I think it's just wonderful that we're helping out our business in the state of Oregon in a quick and efficient manner.
Hey, very good. All right. So, no objection. So ordered. And carriers. Senator Beyer said he'd love to carry this. So we'll do that. Yes, I think maybe we will move up to Senate Bill 205 because a couple of our committee members do have a playing with somebody called Kulongowski, and so I mean, what are we going to do? So we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 205. Mr. Dodson.
Senate Bill 205 authorizes the Public Utility Commission to administer financial assistance program between electricity and natural gas providers and consumer power advocacy groups. Requires commission approval of agreements. Allows public utility that provides financial assistance to recover provided amounts and rates. Declares an emergency effective on passage. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Very good. Commissioner Beyer, Commissioner Hemingway. So I can both come up and introduce yourself. And
somebody couldn't talk to the other commissioners. What are they doing sitting together?
I know.
We just can't talk to each other. We can sit together. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, for the record, I'm Lee Beyer, Commissioner with the Oregon Public Utility Commission, and we have before you a bill to ask your approval to grant us the authority to put on the black and white striped shirts and grab the whistle and referee, if you will, between interveners in rate cases and the utilities themselves. This is an issue, intervener funding is an issue that's gone back a number of years. Many states are involved in this, but essentially what it is the utilities are willing to, under a voluntary agreement, to put some money available to allow the interveners, and there may be many, but the normal interveners in our cases in gas matters, it's the representatives of Northwest gas users, large users, in the electrical cases, and the Citizens Utility Board in all cases. And electrical, it tends to be the industrial customers, electrical customers large, and a number of others. Essentially, what this does is the agreement between the utilities and these groups allows them to put some money on the table to allow these interveners to represent the customers better, if you will. And I think they would tell you, and they may tell you, that their perspective is that the ratepayers pay for the rate cases presented by the utilities, and this will allow the ratepayers to also pay for an opposing view or a challenging view to be there. The role of the utility commission is, and it's if there is an agreement, and again, it's a voluntary thing, if there is one, it allows us to administer that agreement between the parties. That's simply what it is. There is a dash two, I don't believe there's a dash one, dash two amendment, which clarifies how this money would be recovered, and essentially what the recovery mechanism is it says when the rate case is done, it allows the utilities to recover it through what we call a deferral mechanism, and it allows them to recover it at a higher rate than normal, and it allows them to recover it more quickly. In utility manners, the legislature has installed a cap on that of 3-6%, and most proceedings, this would allow, if it's higher than that, to recover it quickly. The amounts of money that we're probably talking about here are fairly small. From the ratepayers' perspective, it probably wouldn't even show up on, wouldn't even be noticeable until it'd be there, but it wouldn't be noticeable. Be happy to answer any questions, and I think I've got I turned around. We've got everybody from the utilities that are involved, which are just the gas and electrical utilities, Citizens Utility Board, and the other customer groups there. And if you have any really hard questions, Commissioner Hemingway will answer them.
This does not involve telecoms. This is just energy.
Does not involve telecom.
Okay.
It's we viewed this as we discussed it. This came out of a task force that the legislature created in 99. They recommended a number of things, but one of them was the recommendation that we create some form of intervener funding mechanism. So this was Commissioner Hemingway, mine, Commissioner Smith's attempt to try and answer that recommendation. And it took a while to do it, but it's a pilot. And the intent, frankly, is the agreement so far that the groups have is it's a five-year agreement. And the intent would be, and it's a pilot, and would allow them to see how it works and be able to come into the 2007 legislature with a bill if it looked like something they'd want to do.
Okay, the only other question I have is on line 17 of the first page that represents broad customer interest. Could you explain that a little bit, how you're going to look at defining that issue?
Well, these are we will set through administrative rule definitions of that. But what we wanted to do was have the authority to. I'm going to give you an example. A group like the Associated Oregon Industries, if they chose to get involved and were a matter, they could request to be qualified to apply for this funding, what we call the issues fund. Also, trying to get it to a sense so it's just not locked into the three traditional groups, but could be for other groups that had an interest, a customer group that they're representing. The rule, like I say, would have to develop the rules around that. It'd be a participatory process to do that. We felt strongly that it shouldn't be just locked into necessarily to narrow groups.
Say a group of three people, you
would not be a group of three. It'd be, no.
There'd have to be some organized facility to the.
Correct.
Okay. Sir Roy, do you want to add anything to that? Welcome.
Sure, thank you. Roy Hemingway, Chair of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I just wanted to add one word about the states, other states that do things like this, and what it will do for our process. We're one of only nine states, I believe, that does not have some sort of public funding for consumer advocacy. Often in many states there is an arm of the Attorney General's office that does that in addition to the regular staff of the commission. In other cases, such as in California, they do something like this, which is they fund consumer advocates. If we get so that we can have consumer advocacy funding in Oregon, what I think it does for our process is it improves the process by ensuring that all sides are represented. Our staff ends up, when consumers aren't represented adequately, playing somewhat of a dual role, both advising the commission and acting as consumer advocates. And sometimes there is a conflict in that role, and it shows up in our record. The groups that appear in front of us are uniformly good. They raise good issues, but often they do not have the funds to hire the experts to be able to put testimony on in our cases that really can add to the record and make a difference. So I think overall for our process, it'll make the records much more complete. It will give us a fuller opportunity to decide the issues, and I think overall it will lend credibility to our proceedings and our results.
It won't add any staffing issues as far as your focus.
No,
no. You're just going to be able to absorb this within your current staff. Thank you, gentlemen. You can see we have everybody else, Paula, Brian, Gary Conklin, Bob Jenks, Sean Miller, Gary Bauer, and Cindy Finlinson. I mean, I think this committee is probably in pretty good shape. If you have any objections to any of the amendments or anything, maybe you have some handout. And if you feel the real need to come up and discuss this, please come up. But I see you're all here for this particular bill, and we can make a note of record that those people in representing Northwest Industrial Gas Users, Industrial Consumers of Northwest Utilities, CUB, Pacific Core, Northwest Natural, and PG&E are all in support of this bill. So, I don't know, Bob, did you want to come up and say anything, or are you...
Mm-hmm. I've had some different testimony if your time is valuable and you want to look at that testimony.
I just know there's a couple of our members that may have to leave, and if we want this bill to pass out, we should hurry up. Is that good?
And we're I votes right now.
Don't be fellas.
That would be
okay, so if there isn't anybody else that has that burning desire to come up and testify, we'll close the public hearing. We'll open up a work session. We have an amendment, the -2 amendments.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 205.
Okay, Senator Walker moves the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 205. Is there any discussion or controversy within the committee? If not, any objections? So ordered.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 205 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, a hearty recommendation.
Okay. Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 205 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Comments from the committee? Any objections? So ordered. I'll carry this one.
Okay.
Unless you have a
bill. Yeah, that's a great bill.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
We'll probably be gone for about 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay.
20 minutes to
have. We're gonna start here now. We're gonna start on 2098. Okay. Well, let's go to Senate Bill 253. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 253. This is the thickest one up here, so we're gonna take that.
Yeah, there it is.
Mr. Dodson, Senate Bill 253 establishes uniform reciprocity with other states. Word agent is replaced with word producer, with provision authorizing insurance brokers. Fee for services required to be disclosed, and makes corresponding changes throughout the statutes. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. We have Carl, Jack, Dean, and Ed. Why don't you folks come on up if you're...
Sounds like a rock group.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Carl Lindberg. I'm the Deputy Insurance Administrator for the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm here to support Senate Bill 253. This bill has nothing to do with credit scoring.
speak up, so
credit scoring.
Yeah. Speak up a little louder, so all right. We all can hear this.
All right, thank you. This bill further facilitates the interstate licensing and the purposes that were set out by the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. The bill proposes to eliminate the agent category and replace it with the term insurance producer. Insurance producers can work on behalf of the insured or on behalf of the insurer. The bulk of this bill, it's a very thick bill, but the bulk of this bill is involved in changing the terminology from agent to producer. The second major part that's dealt with in this bill has to do with agent compensation. It allows a producer to charge a fee or a commission or a combination of a commission and a fee in certain types of commercial transactions. It specifically excludes insurance for an individual person or property or liability. It also excludes life and health groups under 51, and it also excludes commercial and public entities where the combined premium would be less than $100,000. So it's only dealing with larger transactions. And it requires that there be a written agreement between the producer and the consumer, and that the agreement would have certain conditions that it would have to meet that would be established by the rulemaking process. It also provides that this agreement would not be subject to the rebating laws. The bill has also some various clarifying and conforming amendments to licensing statutes that are more or less just housekeeping provisions. There are three amendments to this bill which we also seek your support on. The first one deals with rulemaking and restores the rulemaking that existed prior to the 2001 legislation, which first started to put in place the non-resident licensing reciprocity. This rulemaking allows the way it was before, and what we're seeking to have by this amendment would give us the authority, that is the insurance division from the department, authority to create exceptions from the requirement that an agent has to have an appointment. It would restore the authority that existed prior to 2001, and this basically deals with three areas: the sale of group life insurance policies, the sale by a field agent for a firm or a corporate agent who has the appointment, or in certain circumstances, insurers have very few agents that they've appointed in state, and this enables them to do business more freely within the state. The second amendment that we seek approval on creates a definition for a wholesale producer and a retail producer. It then allows a wholesale producer to charge a fee, which would be charged to the retail producer, and then the retail producer would charge that fee to the purchaser. This amendment allows for commissions or fees or combinations of commissions and fees, subject, again, to rulemaking authority. And it also excludes rebating statutes, as the prior mentioned. This is needed because there's often, these types of transactions are often very complicated, and by having the ability to charge fees or commissions or a combination by a written agreement, it will facilitate these transactions in the marketplace. The third amendment allows a fee to be charged in the surplus lines, and the process is the same. It has to be a written agreement, and the surplus lines types of transactions cover are things for like large outdoor events or antique cars or other kinds of risks that the admitted market in Oregon isn't currently covering. So we would like you to support all those. We ask you to move this to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And they're all incorporated under the dash ones, all those.
They're all in the dash ones, that's correct. But I broke them into three parts because, Mr. Chairman, because they, I thought it would be easier to understand them.
Okay. And I think we should, for the record, at least recess the public hearing and indicate to the record that we are under receiving testimony under as a subcommittee. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have that. So we're taking testimony as a subcommittee now. The two.
And so, again, it's we encourage your support for the measure. We are particularly interested in the changes that have been proposed in Section 17B that deal with providing more flexibility as it relates to compensation in commercial transactions. And frankly, our regulatory structure here is well behind the market, and the market is demanding certain things. And I would say both the public sector market and the private sector market are demanding the flexibility, and the changes that have been proposed here are designed to provide that flexibility. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I'd like to expand upon the points you made, is that insurance are basically regulated at the state level, and banks are, if the federal banks, obviously at the federal level. Could you kind of expand upon that? I mean, we've got other bills before this committee, and
well, we dealt with one the other day that really sort of defines, if you will, the potential conflict that sometimes arises, and that is, banks, for all intents and purposes, have been regulated at the national level. Now, not all banks have national charters, but most do. And I don't think I'm oversimplifying the Oregon statutes that suggest that in most cases they provide for a regulatory structure that sort of follows that which is occurring at the federal level. And so banks have always been regulated there. Insurance, on the other hand, has never been regulated federally, has always been regulated at the state level. The places, of course, where there are tension, and you were subjected to a little bit of that discussion a couple of days ago, are places where those two regulatory structures maybe view the conduct of, in this case, insurance, differently in terms of how it ought to be conducted, and whether or not and what standards and restrictions ought to be placed on various parties that are in the process. I mean, we've always, as agents, always been subject, obviously, to our state regulator. The banks have always been subject to another regulator. Suddenly now they're moving into the insurance area, and they are getting what might be two different signals from two different regulatory sources, and that's the kind of thing that goes on. Now, that's the kind of thing we're trying to work through, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jackson, are you now testifying that you like consolidation and streamline? Are you changing your position from the previous bill?
No, I haven't changed. You know, it's really interesting, though.
It was a joke.
I understand. The regulation, as Mr. Lundberg pointed out, went back to the Depression era when Glass-Steagall, they created these firewalls, and we blew those firewalls away, and you ended up with entities like Citigroup is probably the best example. You know, it's into insurance, it's into banking, it's into Salmon Smith Barney, they're into everything. Now, of course, what you're seeing now in some cases is at least some people who are raising the questions about, should all of those firewalls have been knocked down? Because you have things like the investment, I'll call them scandals. I don't know, that may be overstating it, but certainly the questions about whether or not somebody who's an investment advisory, Jack Grubman, gives maybe an inappropriately rosy projection on the future of some stock, a stock that, that they're underwriting the initial offering of in some other portion of the organization. So, that's the kind of, the kind of reevaluation, I guess, is going on right now.
Mr. Chair, seeing how you brought up Section 17B, Jack, or at least the written testimony you handed out brought it up. I'm just to make sure that I'm reading this correctly. It
sure.
Says, and when transacting insurance and other than the following categories of insurance, so what I'm, even though it's confusing to read it, I'm assuming that means that you have to be, these three areas are areas that you cannot charge an additional commission.
That is correct.
Okay,
what that all says is that in personal lines transactions, the status quo exists. On small group health and life, the status quo exists. And it, particularly in that area, there are a whole series of other restrictions that govern the sale of product in that area. And then the third one, in the commercial market, which I'll call the smaller commercial market, the status quo exists. So the flexibility is going to be there in large group and commercial transactions where the combined annual premiums are greater than 100,000.
Thank you. Hey, could you go over that again? One of the things that we're finding on the floor of the Senate is that people are very concerned about fees and the ability to do things. Explain this to me again so I have a better...
What's going on here?
The question that Senator Beyer just asked, just kind of go back over it. That's okay. 17B says that you may charge a commission or fee other than the commission or fee filed in accordance, only if...
Here again, of course, that this new Senator Nelson. Again, this new flexibility, of course, is contingent upon a written agreement beforehand. But what it's designed to do in that market, again, that commercial market above 100,000, is to allow flexibility to essentially negotiate a package, if you will, a compensation package that might differ from the filed commissions. Right now. And let's use the personal lines market. Companies file commission schedules, and interestingly enough, agents who sell a product are really totally reliant upon whatever that schedule is. I mean, they can't add a $10 fee for this or a $10 fee to, you know, to be reimbursed for something else. They are reliant upon what they get. What has happened in the marketplace is that, for example, a public entity might want a range of different services, including placement of coverage from an agent, and they might want loss control and other advice. They will often put out an RFP that asks for a quote net commission. They want to know, you know, what the policy will cost, and then they want to negotiate a separate compensation arrangement to include placement of the policy, but also to include other activities. Same thing would occur in the private commercial market, and it's going on now. Statute is simply there to create the flexibility to do that.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
Lana and Annette, please come up. Welcome, and introduce yourself and proceed. Says here you're for this bill. Is that right?
We are. Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. Last time I looked, my name's Lana, not Jack. I'm Lana Betterfield. I'm here representing the Professional Insurance Agent.
My apologies.
Of Oregon, Idaho. Well, you know, Jack's very pretty, so I'm happy to be Jack. With me is Ed Ellingson. Ed is the principal manager of Nasberg & Company in Coos Bay, and he is the immediate past president of the Professional Insurance Agents.
Thank you, Chairman, and members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to support this bill as in professional. Do I need to state my name here? For the record, I am Ed Ellingson, as Fauna said, from Nasberg & Company in Coos Bay. And I'm here representing the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon, Idaho. The PIA is a statewide trade association of independent agents, and we have a long history of involvement in the government relations process. SB 253 is important to the insurance agent community, and the Professional Insurance Agents of Oregon, Idaho do support this bill, as the insurance division has requested. 2 points are central to our support of the bill. First, as you've heard before, Oregon is currently an agent-only state, and the brokering activities that have not been previously recognized have been addressed in the bill so that we meet the advice of our counsel from the National Association to provide that language in the statute. And we also support the bill because of the language in there that provides greater uniformity among the states and the ease of licensing. We want to thank the Insurance Division for working with us on this issue, and be happy to answer any questions.
So now you become agent, a producing agent, insurance producer rather than an agent if this passes. Is that correct? Okay. That has to be significant. Okay, well, we have no further folks signed up to testify. Does anybody in the audience wish to testify as this matter? We'll recess this hearing, and hopefully these people will get back, and we will make every attempt that we can today to move this thing forward and get it out and get back because it appears that it's what we do. So we'll recess the subcommittee hearing, and let's see, what do we got here now? We could open up a...
House Bill 2098 prohibits nonprofit organizations' use of Oregon address in charitable solicitations unless the beneficiary nonprofit organization maintains Oregon office or solicitation discloses actual headquarters of nonprofit is outside of Oregon and Oregon address is mail drop. Expands the ability of the Attorney General to enjoin such activities. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Okay, very good. Ross, come on up. Welcome. Please introduce yourself, Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ross Laburn. I'm an Assistant Attorney General. I serve as Attorney in Charge of the Department's Charitable Activities Section. One of our principal missions is to combat charitable solicitation, fraud, and abuse, and we do that primarily by enforcing the Oregon Charitable Solicitations Act. I'm here today to encourage the passage of House Bill 2098, which was introduced at the request of the department and which unanimously passed the House. It would essentially add two provisions to the Charitable Solicitation Act, one substantive and one having to do with remedies. Both of them principally relate to solicitations by out-of-state charitable organizations and professional fundraisers that solicit on their behalf. There are, of course, many worthy national and international charitable causes, but we also know that we have tremendous needs at home, and for many of our donors, it's relevant as to how that money is going to be used. Some of the less scrupulous out-of-state organizations realize that, and they have gravitated toward a practice of setting up private mailboxes to receive solicitations in the state of Oregon, where there, as near as we can tell, is no other purpose for that private mailbox other than to lead our donors to believe that there is a substantial local presence and local use of those funds. As I say, it's a growing practice. We heard from the state of New York that it was a significant problem after 9/11, and the state of New York has, in the last year, passed legislation similar to what you have before you today. Section 2 is the substantive provision of the bill, and it would, in fact, say that if you don't have a bona fide office in the state and you use a local address, particularly for the return address on your contributions, that you then must disclose two things, the actual headquarters of the charity and that the local address is solely a mail handling facility. The second concept of the bill relates to remedies. With respect to local charities, we have oversight authority under a variety of legislation, principally the Oregon Nonprofit Corporation Act, and we have the ability to go to court if there are abuses and seek removal of the offending officers and directors, dissolution of the corporation on occasion, to have a receiver appointed. There are a multitude of remedies. With respect to out-of-state organizations, however, we don't have that kind of jurisdiction. And so what this bill proposes to do is take some existing language and give the Attorney General the authority to go to court to seek to enjoin solicitation in the state until the offending officers and directors who have breached their fiduciary duties are removed by an appropriate court of jurisdiction, typically in another state. Those are essentially the two provisions that would be added to the existing Charitable Solicitation Act. I'd be happy to answer any questions of the committee.
Just a clarification, that was in-state. The Section 3 you're talking about, out-of-state and in-state, does that include in-state folks too?
It potentially could include in-state, but as I say, we already have direct jurisdiction through our courts, so it really wouldn't add any additional authority with respect to in-state organizations.
I just wanted to clarify that. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, it says no fiscal impact, yet you are increasing your workload, so how is it not going to have a fiscal impact on your agency?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, we go after these organizations today through a variety of means. It's just not as easy as we think this will be a much more direct way of going at these organizations. So we're bringing those cases today, but we think it'll be easier if the legislature adopts this legislation.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems like maybe there should be a positive fiscal impact and it should actually save you money if that's the case, and we should see that.
Well, Senator Nelson, Senator Beyer, certainly you're right on an individual case basis. We may be able to do it in less time. On the other hand, I would hope that maybe we'll bring more cases.
Now, thank you for your patience. We took you a little bit out of line there, but there were some folks in the other bills that were from out of town, so I appreciate your patience. We're not in a public work section, or not in a public hearing yet, so we're just in a subcommittee, so if you can stick around a little bit longer, maybe we could, when those other senators come back, at least one of them, that we can get this thing moved and pushed out.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, open up a subcommittee hearing on, so last 355?
Yes.
Senate Bill 355 requires that certain stores require identification of individuals from whom stores purchase used goods. It requires stores to keep specified information about each purchase of used goods. It makes failure to require identification to keep records subject to a maximum fine of $300. No revenue impact, fiscal statement issued.
Okay. I have nobody signed up. Who wants to testify on this? Oh, that's right. Okay. We'll just stand at ease until she gets around. Thank you. Again, after we recessed. And let's see. We'll go to, which would be the best way to...
2098.
We'll go to Senate Bill 2098 and House Bill 2098. Open up a public hearing on that, and you heard part of that testimony, I believe, didn't you?
We heard part of 253 when we left the insurance bill.
Oh, okay.
And let me see if we heard anything. We didn't do 2098.
Okay. Well, let's.
At all.
Everybody loves it. Let's move it.
I love it.
Yeah.
You love it. Okay, this is 2098.
It's fine.
This is 2098. Any further questions under the public hearing? Close public hearing. Open up a work session on House Bill 2098. Do we have some amendments here with this one?
No.
There are no amendments proposed in this bill, so the chair would move House Bill 2098 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And I guess I can carry that since you guys. I'll carry that. You guys weren't here.
Okay.
And then we can go back to 253. All right. We'll open up the public hearing again on Senate Bill 253. And you did hear a portion of the testimony on that. And we do have some amendments on this one.
There were three.
We're in the public hearing right at the moment. Is there any questions from either Senator Walker or Senator Metzger on 253? You need to ask any more questions or anything? We had a fairly long discussion with Jack Monroe about the...
weed farm up.
Yeah,
we did.
About the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act and, the overall thing and what that's doing.
He assured us there's nothing clandestine hidden in it.
We also had Atlanta.
Yeah, device consolidation now, so maybe the banks were right.
Yeah. Senator Beyer asking that question. You believe that. And Ed Ellison also testified, and so everybody was in favor of that. So if there are any other questions in the public hearing from that viewpoint, any other testimony. Close public hearing. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 253. We have some amendments. Dash 1, and they incorporate at least three different provisions. Are there any questions on those?
We got that discussion before. We'll have to.
We got that discussion before.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I'd move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 253.
Senator Walker has moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 253. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 253 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 253 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments from the committee? Any objections from the committee? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, it's official. No one cares about Senate Bill 355. I suggest we adjourn.
Go home. Okay, carry you for that one. I guess I can carry that one too.
You're just doing them all today.
Unless you want to do
no.
it. Okay.
Help yourself.
That's good. So we're down to
355.
355.
I didn't even have a bill file on that.
Yeah, absolutely. No one cares about this. People who sponsor it don't show up.
This is the secondhand rose
bowl. I couldn't find it. It was so thin. You know, there's nothing in it.
The people who sponsor it don't put their name on it. They have to put the committee of judiciary on.
We'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 355, also known as the secondhand rose bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Burdick, and I'm the senator from District 18, Portland and Tigard. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 355. I had this bill drafted at the request of a constituent who raised a very valid concern about secondhand stores that may be inadvertently acting as handy fencing outlets for criminals. This particular constituent had some skis stolen from his home in a burglary, and they later turned up at a secondhand store, and he just happened to find them, and that led to the request for this bill. Senate Bill 355 would require that certain stores request identification of individuals from whom they purchase used goods. The retailers, like pawn shops, would maintain a record of the name, address, date, description of the goods bought, and the type of identification provided by the individual. This information could prove very valuable to law enforcement if the property bought by the secondhand store was stolen. It would also serve as a deterrent to criminals using these businesses for criminal activity. Current law already requires pawnbrokers to ask for identification and maintain records. I believe it would be good policy to extend those requirements to secondhand stores. I also support, in a moment you'll hear the City of Portland testify, and I support suggested changes in the bill to deal with concerns that they have. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Is there some reason why this is in our committee rather than judiciary? Would you guys like it in judiciary?
Mr. Chairman, when it this must have been just the raw power of the chair of the Business and Labor Committee at work.
It was awesome, wasn't it?
Nobody cared about it, obviously.
Why do we want to stay and listen to this testimony? I mean, I don't know whether...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be most happy to do that.
Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mark Landau. I'm with the City of Portland's Office of Government Relations. We did voice a little concern with this bill. The City of Portland does have a city code addressing any of the issues that Senator Burdick is trying to accomplish in her measure. However, the concern that we have is that the bill would create a penalty. And the problem with that is that as a result of that, we would be preempted to continue to utilize our city code to deal with repeat violators of this. In some rare instances, as Commander Jane Ferreras states in the letter that's before the committee, we do use criminal sanctions in cases where these types of companies are repeat violators in moving stolen goods knowingly. So the problem that's created here is that because there is a sanction, we would be prohibited from going beyond that, having a stiffer sanction in these instances. So we raised this concern with Senator Burdick. We're working on trying to find a solution to that. I hope that we can, and that's basically the summation completion of my testimony at this time.
Okay. Sounds good. I mean, is this something that really should be in judiciary rather than in business?
Chairman, I expected it to go to judiciary. I haven't a clue how it got here. But I trust this committee to do the right things.
Well, we had talked with, I think Judy Brandis had some issues. She thought this was the bill that she was going to have some issues with it, and she actually requested. She has some bills on the iron pants. Have you heard that? It's free market bills that have gone
iron
to
pants.
Iron pants where people actually stuff.
Is that something to do with crop?
Yeah,
I was wondering.
They come to shoplift and they stick the stuff down in the iron pants, and then as they go out the doors, and there's a flea market. Somehow, this doesn't have anything to.
No, this is. I'm familiar with that other bill, and this is to best of my knowledge, completely unrelated. This is.
Okay. Well, it seems to be more of a criminal matter, and you're concerned about the penalty involved in it, and so. We'll if you guys can keep discussing, and I'll pass this by Senator Menace and
great.
See what his views of the world.
And if it would be productive to try to move the bill to judiciary, we could maybe consider that as well.
I don't know if this committee wants to handle this.
I think it's a judiciary bill, and I serve on it.
I do want to hear the iron pants bill.
Yeah, I do want the iron pants bill. That one's just too hysterical.
Okay, any further testimony on Senate Bill 355? We'll close the public hearing and we'll work
Thank
on
you.
This issue and keep this thing alive. Thank you very much, Senator. So we'll close the public hearing, and we have no further business coming before the committee, so we will close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you
for